Hello, this is Michelle Masurgeon, and I'm the community correspondent for WBIX, and it is Tuesday, April 16th, and we are here for the next in a series of bylaw committee meetings. Just to give everybody some updates on some upcoming meetings, on Tuesday, April 23rd, the Pacifica Bylaws Revision Committee will be meeting at DC 1707 75 Varick Street, the 14th floor, the corner of Canal Street. You can take the ACE 1 or 2 to Canal Street. The agenda items for that meeting is going to be the function and power of LABs. Should the LABs have the same election procedures rules, the number of LAB members, the term of office, removal provisions, etc. The next meeting will be on Tuesday, April 30th. This is the Bylaws Revision Committee, and it'll be held at the Maplewood Main Library, 51 Baker Street in Maplewood, New Jersey. It is hosted by the Concerned Friends of New Jersey. Directions to Maplewood are at http://snow.pro/wbailab/. And the agenda items are the National Board of Directors, the role and function of the National Board, the number of directors, how many from each lab, at-large and appointed members, eligibility, term of office, removal provisions, etc. Tonight's meeting is located at the Henry Winston Center on West 23rd Street. This is a town hall meeting of the Bylaw Committee, lab, and...
All that is available right here. What else? More of the same. And here is the so-called the timeline, the process that we're going to use to the different steps we're going to cover to achieve, you know, new bylaws and fair elections. Okay. Maybe Leslie wants to. Leslie, I didn't expect Leslie to be here. Did you say you were coming? Or you were supposed to. Okay.
She came here to watch you.
In preparing the agenda, I didn't leave any role for Leslie. As you know, Leslie has plenty.
We've had two previous meetings of the New York Bylaws Committee. Can just by show of hands, can people indicate if you've been at one or more of those meetings? The Bylaws Revision. Okay. Well, since a lot of you have, I won't go over. I won't say quite as much, but because there are a number of people here who haven't been to any of those meetings, let me just say a very short word or two. We are here in New York in the early stages, not the very beginning, but the early stages of the work of the Bylaws Revision Committee based here in New York City. We are one of five such groupings around the country. That is, in each listening area, there are groupings like this meeting that are all connected to each other and feed into a national process that actually was mandated as part of the settlement agreement of the lawsuits to review and revise the bylaws. That is the governance structure of the foundation. There are a host of different issues related to bylaws. One of those issues will be addressed tonight, so I'm not going to get into that. But that's why this process is going on over several months, because we really want in each of the five listening areas for listeners, lab members, non-paid programmers, paid staff, everybody involved, to really have an opportunity to raise their concerns, raise their ideas, make their contribution to the process. What will happen is that out of each of the sets of ideas that are developed in each of the five listening areas, those will all be collated and put together into a national draft. And that draft will then be sent to all of the LABs, to the Interim National Board, and back to the five committees for further review and revisions and questioning and changes, additions, and that will then be collated again into another draft, and that will be sent back. That is assuming this time. Our goal is to get bylaws, or at least a significant portion of the bylaws, done by September, so that there's time to do the lab elections during fall, which is, you know, a critical part of this. This is all, of course, in the context, just to remind us all in case we forget for a half a second, that this all comes out of the tremendous fight and struggle that all of us in this room and many, many other people in New York and around the country have been involved in to reclaim Pacifica. And part of what we won here, it was the right, actually, and in some way the privilege, of working on defining a new set of governance principles for this organization and to push ourselves to actually create the first and probably only democratically structured media institution in this country, and maybe anywhere in the world, I don't know, but certainly in this country. So what we're doing, not only tonight, but through this process, has potential ramifications, you know, way beyond our station here or even the five stations. We really are breaking ground that hopefully other media outlets will have to take seriously and have to look at. So, again, I don't want to go into a lot of detail because people have been, you know, at a number of these meetings already, but the bylaws review and revision process is central to the work that's going on throughout this network for this whole year, this year of transition and rethinking and rebuilding the Pacifica network. It's not the only challenge we face, but it's a very, very critical piece of the work we're doing. So that's probably enough.
Thank you, Leslie. Well, even though we have it's a scary agenda. I'm completely blind almost without my glasses, except for important things. Although we have 11 items, many of them are really very, very short. Now, as short as Liz's presentation was, the next item by Janice K. Bryant was something that we intended really for, we were hoping to have to fill up this room completely. Today I went to a meeting of the Central Labor Council Immigration Committee, and I was telling Leslie, they offer some great food, and usually that room is full. And today it was half empty, and I knew, I said, well, if this is a sign, it's not going to be very busy tonight, you know? Well, so anyway, we were hoping that if we had a lot of new faces, there would be an extensive, you know, a fairly extensive reading of the different steps so that people understood clearly the process that we have to go through and the time sequence and so on. So Janice will summarize that process.
First, I'll give some timeline. We talked about it before, but is this on the internet?
It is on the internet.
Okay, so you'll be able to get this even if you don't get it jotted down. I'll speak fairly slowly, and it'll be brief. We already missed our first deadline, April 15th. We were supposed to have brief written statements that would be distributed to the other subcommittees around the country. And I guess at some point we're going to have a revised date as to when we can think, after tonight, when we think we can make that goal. The next date to think about is May 31st, and that's when the National Committee will produce and circulate one or more rough drafts of the proposed bylaws. That'll be a synthesis of from every area, from every listening area in the country. Say that again? May 31st, that's the date that we get to see and circulate the first rough draft. July 15th, that's when we do the revision. We'll produce a revised draft, and July 15th, it'll be circulated. The next date is August 15th. That's the date of the final draft that will be submitted to the labs and to the board, national board. And then August 31st is our target date for obtaining all required votes of approval. That's the drop dead date. and December 29th, under the legal settlement agreement, the lab elections must be completed within 1 year of the date of the first meeting of the Interim Pacifica National Board. That was 12-29-01, so we got 12-29-02. That we're shooting for everything to be finished. And then a new board of directors will be elected March 29th of 2003. Now, the current meeting schedule for right now for us locally, April 23rd, we'll be back at 75 Varick Street. That's Tuesday, April 23rd. Tuesday, April 23rd. That's when this will be our follow-up from tonight. We're, we'll really be getting, I hope, closer to having something actual. And then the next meeting, Tuesday, April 30th, is going to be in New Jersey at the Maplewood Main Library. Concerned Friends of New Jersey are giving that. Do you want the address now, or you know you'll hear about that a lot more? And you can come up here and get these. This is what I was reading from, the long version of what I was reading from. Okie dokie. Any questions? All right. That's the last item before we get to the presentations. Let's move along. Sound all right? Okay. The listener member volunteer model is going to be presented by Berthold Reimers. Now, Ray told me he's allotted 15 minutes for the presentation. That's a long time. If you can finish before 15 minutes and take questions, I don't think anybody will object. Okay, Berthold.
Hi, my name is Berthold Reimers. I've been a WBAI listener for... I've been a WBAI listener. I've been a WBAI listener since 1979 during the Sandinista Revolution. That's when I started listening as a WBAI listener since 1979, around the time of the Sandinista Revolution when I was in college. Like most listeners, I did not become a participating listener until like 5 years into listening. I did get involved extensively in the WBAI matters, in Pacifica matters, starting after the coup. And basically that's my story. I'm a listener. There are many different versions of who should be a listener, sponsor, voter. And before I talk about my version, I want to quickly talk about the versions that I am opposed and why, and that will give you a framework for why I'm coming with my version. There was the first version where this version is not as popular anymore, but at one time, people were against the whole concept of elections. And there was some legitimate reason for that. The reason was basically voting is dangerous, and you can have an organized group of the right wing with $250,000 that would take over the station with no problem. However, my rebuffing of this argument is, first of all, you would not prescribe that for the United States, right? I mean, right now, obviously, we all know that elections in the United States is the worst, but yet you do not want to get rid of elections. You know, I mean, you would realize quickly that GE and all those Enron would quickly be the Microsoft would be the one choosing your president. Okay, so yeah, they do anyways. So the whole idea is that how would we stop people from taking over? Well, you have many solutions. You have campaign finance reform in the U.S. You have equal time for all candidates, regardless of how much money they can raise. You have a multi-party system, and you have the concept of proportional representation, which gave New York City Council in 1957 the first Adam Clinton Powell and the first communist in the history of the City Council in New York. How is that related to WBAI in Pacifica? We have to realize that the takeover at WBAI in Pacifica was from within. It was not from without. Okay. Somehow, the selected group that were progressive, lost the concept of the mission statement, and we, the listeners, did not get a chance to support, you know, WBI Lab, for example, was a progressive opposing that coup. We didn't get a chance because the listeners did not know what was going on. We had no power. Checks and balances. We need a system of checks and balances where the listeners, listener sponsors, lab, station board, Pacifica National Board, and producers share in decision-making and keeping true to the Pacifica mission. If we have enough producers on that board, you will have, in a way, kind of checks and balances from that would support us, that would prevent us from having a systematic right-wing takeover also. Now, this is the first model. I believe that this concept is there of not having elections, so I'll move to the next one. The constituency model, first of all, I want to define the constituency model that I'm opposing. The constituency model that I'm opposing is the model that says different groups can actually come, and because they have an activist history, like the VKS movement, and so on, can just come and basically select and appoint members to the WBAI local advisory board or station board. And of course, the rationale is this would practically protect us from the right-wing takeover because we would know the history of those progressive movement. However, I have some serious problem with this model. What criteria would we use to define what is progressive? Take a labor union or the VKS movement or the Bread Forum or the Black Radical Congress. Yeah, these are fine groups I would like to have as participating. However, they are very progressive groups and we would like to have them. But let's assume that I'm Haitian American. And in my lifetime, I've known thousands of Haitians. I've had thousands of Haitian listservs when I was young and having and partying. And I can easily get in touch with those people and tell them to support their brother Haitian, and I can easily decide that I am a constituency. And how are you going to prove that I'm not? So these are the problems. These are the issues that are the problem with the criteria. The second problem with the constituency model are lobbying. Okay. Now, once an 1199 person gets selected or get appointed to the national to WBAI board, who do you think his interest is going to defend? Okay, he's going to defend the interests of 1199 first. He's going to push the 1199 ticket at WBAI, and that's called lobbying. That's called Enron. And So these are our problem with basically the constituency model and no voting model. Now, listener member volunteer model. My definition of a listener sponsor volunteer is anyone who subscribes to WBAI. This should be clear. I mean, there are arguments against, well, it's easy for people to give money, but people just do not give money. You know, they give money because they do care, and up to now, they have been supporting the station. Contributors within the past couple of months or years are to be determined. Contributors of any of the three lawsuits against the Old Pacifica National Board. Contributors who concern friends, debatable. Individual who volunteer 3 hours or more within a certain time frame. Individual or listeners group active in the movement to Free Pacifica. Former staff who reside in the area. Former subscribers within the past X years. Provision only for the first couple of elections. Low-income, disabled, or other individuals who are listeners but unable to contribute. But with this in mind, the low income is a very dynamic concept that's very controversial, and this is my take on it. Okay. The harder you work for something, the harder you are willing to give it up. I mean, if you are not willing to make an effort to show or to prove that you're a listener by calling or by showing up at an event, what is really your dedication to WBAI, regardless of, how harsh, of a life you have and how difficult is it for you to have enough time to dedicate, 2-3 hours to WBAI? I personally have no time, and I'm here. I shouldn't be here right now. I have so many things to do. I'm in school. But I made a choice, and my school will suffer. So these are sacrifices that listeners should make. And then this is what will determine who really care about BAI. And then once we get to this point, we will not have a problem of takeover whatsoever. However, the station lab, and the station, the lab, should have to do the necessary outreach, and all of us will have to do the necessary outreach. I think this is not a criticism, this is just a suggestion. I think the station should talk a lot more about this. And they should have cards that are going every hour on the hour, talking about outreach, elections, bylaws. Hopefully we'll be able to reach all the listeners. There's also the concept of town hall meeting, rallies organized by WBAI, outreach event with babysitters. You know, I mean, I went to a socialist conference in Philadelphia 3 years ago. They had babysitting 24 hours a day, and then you could participate in the conference with no problem. I have also another problem with this. There's an idea that I was coming up with, the fact that anyone who listens to WBAI or anyone within this region can vote. That concept is a very dangerous concept. Are you basically telling me that 10 million New Yorkers can just decide tomorrow to vote? That's not going to make it. You know, there has to be some ways of determining who cares for WBAI, who listens to WBAI, and those people who do not contribute or who do contribute should sign a survey of some sort that describes their like, their income, their race, because we always talk about WBAI being addressing the race issue. We do not know exactly our listenership. We do not know the income level. We need to, you know, come up with some surveys, you know, and maybe this should be some criteria. Survey should be filled so that we can have listener voters. I'm very excited about the whole idea and concept of evaluating programs at the station and to meet the needs of the oppressed and the oppressed communities. However, I'm also very scared about that concept. First of all, I support the idea that the producers should definitely have freedom to choose their program, you know, and of course they can listen to suggestions from us listeners. But I was addressing mostly the concept of, you know, we have to change our style, our message maybe, to address the youth. I do not think so. This is, you know, I think most people would think this is very shocking. I do not think so. I think our message is fine. I think the way we give the message might be a little stale, but we can change that. But our message is fine, and there are plenty of progressive youth out there that actually espouse our ideas. You know, we do not need to go out there and find out the youth that are not involved. We can try to change them, but we should not change our program, you know, and our content, you know, covering the Palestinian questions, to just get, you know, more listeners. You know, then we fall into the same arbitrary rating type of concept, you know, in another way. So basically, these are, you know, my concept of who a listener sponsor volunteer should be. And I would not go any further and elaborate, because you have a package that talks about the Pacific Commission. You should read it. It is very important for you to determine, before you say you do anything here or you decide anything or vote on anything, to determine what does WBAI mean to you. What is WBAI to you? It means different things to different people. For me, WBAI, you know, is a conduit for progressive leftist ideas, for empowerment. For others, it's you know, it's an alternative music, and it's different things for different people. But it can be all of those things at the same time. So we should try to really figure this out, and then I think you would choose my listener sponsor volunteer project with proportional representation, which is the best way to make sure that all constituencies or segments of the population are represented, because it gives to all voters the ability to choose and to have a choice in all of the candidates that have been that have been selected to be on the board. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. I'll ask a question.
I
think
we have time.
He came in under 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
We should have questions.
Yeah, well, the
format is to have questions under different circumstances, though. Mm-hmm. At this point, the format is to have questions if there's time, because there's something else we're going to do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go ahead.
This thing about democracy is a very wonderful thing, but it's also very dangerous, because you're not going to really expound democracy with so many members, so many listeners, so many contributors, and so on and so forth. I've been listening to BAEI for a long time. This is the third meeting I attend. I also attended the meeting at the Socialist Scholars Conference. So I have an idea as to who is who in a way, still very elementary in terms of my mind. I would not be able to vote now. Voting is through information and intelligence and judgment. And there is no way you can have the membership, which I think is admirable in that vein, or even a smaller group, the immediate community, to have this kind of process of participation. The whole idea of participation and direct democracy goes back to the Greeks in ancient Athens. And in that sense, when they actually had that, they were not even voting. It was by lot. The most democratic way of the Athenian way, it was by lot, just like you have the lottery ticket. So in that sense, if you have all the memberships and then you draw by lot, I would not encourage that, because also all the Athenians did not vote because they had a lot of slaves, women didn't vote, and so on and so forth. The other model, I think, someone should look at it, if they have any idea, is to look at the so-called New England town meetings. And in that sense, most of them are diminished now because they are impractical. Distances are long. People travel long distances. They don't know each other. The whole idea of participation and making a judgment in terms of a good selection of candidates to serve us, either on the local level or on the national level, is to know about them. And I would never be able to vote intelligently with this kind of information I have now. Some other kind of process should be put in place in a transitional way, I think, before we come to this.
Okay. I think the 15 minutes are over. Actually, it's clear now the question. What I was trying to say is that we have conceived of this program as a succession of presentation of comparison of at least three models. We know they have different visions, and when we've seen those models, they are subdivision, they have different ideas about how to execute them exactly. So the idea was to have three presentations. The following one is going to be done by Mimi Rosenberg. Mimi?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
The next one's going to be mission for that. Paul.
Yeah, Paul is the last one.
And that's where you have it on.
Hmm?
That's where you have it.
No, we decided to ask them to flip a coin, actually. I'll tell you later about it. So, anyway, Mimi's going to talk about the so-called constituency model, and she will do it within 15 minutes.
Ha!
She will try to do it in 15 minutes.
Uh-oh, Janice said, yet you will. Questions are shredding. The first thing I really need to say is, one, it's wonderful that people, particularly in 92-degree weather, came out. And beyond that, the dialogue that has ensued has been very rich and enriching, and contributions from Nan Rubin later, and Mark Sanborn, and Fred Nguyen, and all the others have been very thought-provoking. I'm not going to lay out a model. I want to lay out a conceptual framework, a political framework, and some ideas that I hoped people would encompass. I've been also giving a great deal of thought to the concept of what it means to democratize. It was extremely hard to fight for the, if you will, liberation of the station. It's perhaps even harder now to fight for the nation-building time, how to reconstruct the station and figure out what it was and strengthen it. And for me, that is not merely the issue of the governance structure of the Pacifica National Board or the lab. It's much broader than that. What I want to accomplish is I really wanted to have some ideas percolate to stimulate enough of a sense of need to create and come out of this meeting with a task force to work on a model of inclusion. And that's what I'd like to have a vote on at some point tonight, or the imprimatur of the Pacifica National Board, et cetera, to set up. What I wanted to say about democracy, to me, democracy is not just about, again, participation. It's about extending the franchise. Otherwise, it's a narrow, constricted body that speaks to itself and replicates itself despite its best intentions. Now, it's an old message when people say, Marshall McLuhan said it a long time ago, form follows function, and that's why I've come up with some ideas. And that, to me, is, so what is the function of this wonderful media outlet? And it's to enhance and to build on and contemporize the Pacifica mission. The Pacifica mission is not frozen with Lou Hill. Lou Hill did not satisfy and does not satisfy my need to come up with an anti-colonialist, anti-racist, non-chauvinistic model of restructuring the paradigm of power. I don't think that's who Lou Hill was. I don't think that's what he wanted to do. It's not a critique, but the need to enhance and make real for these times what that mission was. And so these are some concepts that I think that need to be built in. And again, the form will follow the function of our station. As a communication vehicle capable of altering the power paradigm, shifting power to the poor and working class, the oppressed and disenfranchised. BAI, the network, as a progressive voice accountable to current and as yet unrepresented listeners who are poor and from the working class and oppressed and disenfranchised. And our highest priority is to attract as listeners and become accountable to the poor, the working class, the oppressed, and the disenfranchised. And I must admit, I find an incredible comment that 1199 rank and file is equivalent to the influence of Enron, but notwithstanding that, the conceptual framework is. And these are some ideas. Numerically, the more powerful majority usually and simply subsume minority references. The majority does not represent the minority. When the majority is fixed and permanent, there are no checks on the ability to be overbearing. It's a heterogeneous community. Any faction with total power might subject the minority to caprice and arbitrary decisions of the majority, who instead of consulting the interest of the whole community collectively, attend sometimes to partial and local advantages. The history of struggle against tyrannical majorities is instructive as to the dangers of winner-take-all collective decision-making. Majority rule, which presents an efficient opportunity for determining the public good, suffers when it is not constrained by the need to bargain with minority interests. When majorities are fixed, the minority lacks any mechanism for holding the majority accountable or even having it listen. Nor does the majority rule concept promote deliberation or consensus. The permanent majority simply has its way without reaching out to or convincing anyone else. And it is my belief that the current models, and the model indeed of KPFA, which dilutes the vote of minorities and various constituency groups by what it alleges to be proportional representation, is indeed a perpetuation of the current majority. The franchise must give status to the individual voter, but it derives its vitality from its exercise by a politically cohesive group who elect representatives to promote consideration of groups' interests in public policy. Equal status as participants within the political sphere is possible only if members of the group are allowed to participate at all stages of the process. A meaningful right to vote contemplates minority participation in post-election policymaking as well as pre-election coalition building and deliberation through the participation of another one who is in one's likeness. It is not fair if we engage in the periodic ritual of elections, but only the permanent majority gets to choose who is elected. Now, issues of consideration. Again, these are just thoughts. Pre-election involvement in policymaking. Opportunity to elect candidates. Are whites still disinclined to vote for candidates of color? Access to voting processes, polls. People talked about ballots. Why wouldn't there be ballots, for example, in a local record shop or food service shop or indeed a union hall so the rank and file, which is not the same as the labor bureaucracy, might vote? Impediments to voting. What deters potential candidates from running? Qualitative voting dilution, which is how I look at the KPFA model. It claims to be proportionately representative, and so it says people of color, and then it has very conveniently, without demographic justification, et cetera, too black, too Latin. I'm just hypothesizing, but that's a general notion. So it has a gender issue and it has a racial component, but without any base in reality, and more importantly, without a political base so those groups can truly act to influence the body and take a majority stance at times, or a prevalent and winning stance. The question of a subscriber fee to me is a poll tax. I'm amazed to say that people, when they talked about it, and then some comments have been made, there are millions of people who are on fixed incomes. There are seniors. There are people on disability. There are people on public assistance. And there are people unemployed in this country and on unemployment. It is a poll tax that prevents people from being involved if you put a registration fee. Outreach to districts and voting in neighborhood establishments, advertisements in community papers. It is not sufficient just to use our airwaves. And again, I'm going through a notion that we don't own this station. There are groups of people we want to become listeners who, in order to do that, must be involved from the outset, and it's our responsibility to figure out methodologies of outreach that look like the culture and experience of those communities. And when I say we, I mean a much broader we than me making that determination. Goals. To convene a task force, that's what I'd like to see tonight, with the imprimatur of the IPNB and the lab to explore methods for involvement and representation. Restructuring the process to reflect more fundamentally the sobering reality of inequality in our society and our network. Blacks, as a poor and historically oppressed group, are in greater need of solicitude, which whites often resent and vigorously oppose. Even sympathetic whites are not dependable in considering black, and this could be other groups as well, black interests, in that individuals must also accommodate the more dominant views of their white constituents. I think these are very real to the way we have proceeded. No ill intent. The proof is in the pudding. We are what we are here. I want to just offer a brief critique of some of the models that have been put forth and suggest some others. I do believe that we are fundamentally still in a state of denial about race and racism, and that there's nothing unique to this body of the left in being so. There's the subscriber model, the winner-take-all majority, i.e. subscriber and volunteers with certain hours, which is also prohibitive of working-class people becoming immersed in this, and also groups that we'd like to reach out to that are not yet involved in our communities of interest. And obviously what comes to mind is the new immigrant communities that are so oppressed and profiled within our society. If not for them, who are we maintaining the station for? So the subscriber model, which has representation in it, unconnected to demographics or political representation of the minority, special interest groups that cause vote dilution, individuals rather than group interests, so that even if you do have a person of color, is that person necessarily representative of a political interest within the context of their community? Or are we deleting the prevalent movements that have created social change within the context of this society? There's also issues of I mean, there's a lot more to be said about the so-called subscriber model. One of the other concepts that I'm looking at a little bit more affirmatively, and it has problems and it would need to be honed, is the spokes-council model. Spokes-council model came out of a lot of the activities of the anti-globalization model. For example, what they do, it's almost like, you know, picture a wheel with spokes. Black candidates, for example, could bring out black voters. There would be a sense of connectedness to the community. Each group could attend in whatever numbers they wish. So in other words, let's say you had a gay, lesbian, and transgendered group, a group of immigrants from specific communities, various ethnicities. They could form constituency groups, and they could come up with a determination as votes are taken and actually create representation that was not just in face or coloration or cultural reality, but was based on an ideological stance that represented those communities of interest. That's what I think would be enormously helpful. It could be anything from, you know, you could call it interest departments, you can call it constituency groups, you can call it spokes council models, etc. In effect, you're almost looking at creating a bicameral model where you have two governance structures. And one structure might be a board proper, and then there are departments set up, and the departments would be fluid in the sense that there are different interests politically at different points in time. We have a war in the Middle East. The representation and the interests of that community of people which are affected here has a different relevance than it might have had for us several years ago. Well, given the fact that, thank you, Jen, there's also concepts of supermajority voting. It modifies winner-take-all majority rule to require that something more than a bare majority of voters must approve or concur before action is taken. As a uniform rule, supermajority empowers any numerically small but cohesive group of voters. Supermajority remedies giving bargaining power to all numerically less powerful groups, such as women, gays, lesbians, transgender, people of color, etc. There's other models as well. One, for example, one African-American vote, one person votes, gets two votes as a model and a remedy for participation. By the way, there's nothing unique about these. So we have one of the most backward systems in this country. Governments all over the world use different systems of voting. Lastly, what I want to say just is the question of takeover, since I really witnessed it very close up. Takeover, of course you need checks and balance. But the takeover wasn't a logistical or numerical problem. It was a political problem. It was a problem where most people were not minding the store. They were not immersed in, they were not involved in, they didn't care and think about the governance structure. That included both people inside the station and outside the station. The other problem is there was an issue that took place around race, and there was a serious vacuum that was filled. There was a reason that the board gravitated to people like Mary Frances Berry, because they put not politics in command, they put reputation in command based on old activities that had been committed during the civil rights movement without any contemporary understanding of how people had been bourgeoisified, had become opportunists, and how they were living out their politics now. But it was a political problem first and foremost. And Mary Frances Berry filled a vacuum that was out there. It was a moribund board, first and foremost. And it didn't have a political ideology, and the network didn't have a political ideology. Bertold identified himself as a member of the left. That has not been the identity of this station, this network, at all. And it needs a firm and clear political identity. And that's the strength in takeover. Because I can assure you, if and when the government comes to take us, it will not be about numerosity that's going to prevent the takeover. It's going to be based on the political philosophy of how people look at resistance in government that will stop it from destroying us. And first and foremost, the takeover was based on neoliberal politics. Okay. So there are many things, of course, that to think about in this. But again, I really, really ask that if we want to look different and we want to be representative, which this body, with its good intentions and its sincerity, is not, that it must think about creating a task force tonight, and a task force of inclusion to reach out to the forces within this society that are the reliable forces and will be for social transformation and new forms of empowerment. Thank you.
Short time.
She went to 15 minutes, but I think we could take a couple minutes for questions. I don't see why not.
Okay. Do people prefer to ask questions after each presentation? Is that the idea?
Could the speaker speak to the point?
Yes.
Yes.
I think it has to be a little bit more structured than that. I mean,
well, this is our first attempt. We have speakers. They have a theme to address, and we're not going to micromanage it at this point. So hopefully we can do better next time. So far, I think we're doing fine.
Question. The posing of the question to the speaker should take no longer than 30 seconds.
Okay. When we are setting up this program, I'll say it again, we've decided that after the three presentations, there will be questions asked from all three presenters at the same time.
But no statements.
I'm not sure. I don't understand the question, the last part.
What
statement?
Move on.
Okay. Okay. The last presentation will be done by Paul Serovello. Suddenly disappeared. Paul? Okay, maybe he's nervous. Anyway, Paul has chosen to do a presentation about what he considers the best model. He believes that his model, which he calls the mission-driven statement, encompasses the best elements of the two presentations that we made earlier. Paul Somerville.
Thank you. Can you hear me out there? I have a very weak voice today. Who said no? Whoever said no, would you please come up here? Come up here so you can see me.
Because every. I want to see you. We want to hear you.
Yeah. Okay. This is going to be really rough because I don't have my usual powerful voice today. But I thought it was fortuitous that yesterday I received my WBAI membership card in the mail. And you know, when I got this, I actually had a really good feeling about it. That it meant something, and it was an acknowledgement of the fact that I'm supporting the station and that my contribution to WBAI is making it possible, through the contributions of thousands of other people, making it possible for WBAI to exist and to enable Pacifica to exist. And, you know, there's a lot of discussion about sort of downplaying the importance of membership. Well, we got to talk about listeners and membership. You know, you don't want to exclude all the listeners, and you know, you can't just talk about members. You have to talk about listeners. Well, let's talk about membership. That's what we really have to start talking about. We have to start talking to those listeners who are not members and bring them in, because if we don't, we're not going to survive. Now, my model is, I believe, a way of combining what you've heard in the two presentations thus far. On the one hand, you have the notion that the people who should make decisions about Pacifica and WBAI should be the people who are committed to the station, the people who have made a contribution, who have participated either by contributing their funds. And don't forget, when you contribute your funds, it's not just money, it's not just paper, it's your labor time. It's part of your life that you're contributing. Or that they've contributed their hours, you know, they've volunteered, they've gone into the station, they've answered phone calls. And at this moment, I think we really have to start considering and developing additional forms and additional ways that people can contribute, especially if we want to make sure that people who are homebound, people who, you know, the cost of a subway ride might be prohibitive out in the outlying areas up in the Bronx and Harlem, maybe they want to contribute, maybe they want to volunteer, but they can't come down to the station. So we have to think of creative ways that we can go to them and bring them the materials, bring them the flyers that they can pass around to their neighbors, Bring them the mailings that they can stuff. Bring them the list of phone numbers that they can call, and then they can make an effort and feel the same kind of pride that I felt, you know, when I got my membership card. I felt really good about the fact that I contributed, I participated. And I think that that is something that we should not deprive anybody of the opportunity to feel. So anyway, I'm going to run through the model. It's basically a four-point model. First of all, that labs will be elected by the membership of WBAI. There will be a detailed affirmative action plan that will mandate the racial, ethnic, and gender composition of the elected lab. A rigorous nominations process will assure that a strong field of pro-mission candidates is nominated. And finally, to address the concern that there could be a takeover attempt by hostile forces, that a maximum of one-third of the lab seats will be contested in the first election, thereby making it absolutely impossible that the elections could be hijacked and that the station could be hijacked by hostile forces. Okay, now, getting into some more specifics. Voting by membership. And by the way, I've written this out, and I'll put it out on the internet tomorrow. I just finished it this afternoon. I also want to say, by the way, that a lot of the thinking behind what I've written comes from an email that was sent by Ann Emmerman, chairperson of the WBAI lab, back in January, in which she essentially laid out the affirmative action goals of the lab membership committee. And by the way, to sort of comment on some of the stuff that Mimi said about the fact that, sort of implying that this institution, Pacifica, is still an institution that is dominated by the majority, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that the WBAI lab is dominated by the majority. I think the WBAI lab is an excellent example of diversity and balance. And what I'm proposing is basically a system where we can continue that excellent combination that has been assembled by the WBAI lab and, in fact, improve upon it. Now, who will vote under this plan? Who will vote essentially same concept as Berthold, except I would be even more restrictive. I believe that listener sponsors, subscribers, volunteers, and any individuals who find it impossible to volunteer, but the only category that I can imagine that would fit in, or the only category of people that would qualify in that sense to me would be prisoners. However, there may be ways that prisoners can contribute. Maybe there are ways that prisoners can volunteer their time and somehow spread the word about WBAI among the prison population. I mean, we should not preclude them from that opportunity. So that has to be investigated. Okay. Secondly, there will be a detailed affirmative action plan based on the KPFA model, but taking it further. The KPFA model calls for 50% of the lab to be people of color, 50% to be female. And what I would do is I would further specify the breakdown of people of color. And in fact, I'll do this by example. In the first election, we currently have 16 lab members. 8 are people of color, 8 are Caucasian. 50-50. 8 are female, 8 are male. I would grandfather the entire lab of 16. And we would add 8 new members who would be up for election. Those 8 members would include, and these would be seats that would be mandated. We would have 4 seats mandated for Latinos, 2 seats for Asians, 1 seat for an Arab American, and 1 seat for a Native American. That would result in a lab of 24 members, of which Caucasians would be 8, could constitute 8 members of one-third of the lab. People of color would be two-thirds of the lab. And you would have representation very close to the actual composition in New York City. So part of what I've prepared is the actual breakdown in the New York City population of the various ethnic groups. In the year 2000, these are the official New York City population statistics. 35% of the population is white, 24.5% is black, slightly under 10% is Asian, 27% is Hispanic. And then there are very small percentages for other groups. And the breakdown that I proposed for the 24-member lab would be very close to that. Blacks would constitute 25%, one-fourth. Latinos would constitute one-fourth. Asians would constitute slightly under 10% with two members. You would have one Arab American, one Native American, and eight Caucasians, who would be 33%, which is very close to their actual percentage in the general population of 35%. Okay. Now, in addition to that, however, there would also be attempts to bring in further aspects of diversity. We would try to recruit and nominate candidates who are active in all of the social protest movements, labor, civil rights, social justice, the disabled, prisoners' rights. We would try to encourage gay candidates, gay members. However, if it weren't possible to come up with the full breadth of diversity that we're seeking, then I'm suggesting that the lab be allowed to appoint non-voting members to fill in the missing gaps. And the people who would be entitled to make the appointments would be those people elected, the eight people who were actually elected in the first election. And these would be appointments that would be done openly. It would be a competitive process. Essentially positions would be announced. People could apply for the positions. There would be public meetings in which people would answer questions about their intentions, their ideas. All right. Staff members. I'm proposing that we elect an additional two members from the staff, and that those two staff members also follow the affirmative action structure, and that the staff election would take place first, and depending on who was elected from the staff, which groups were represented, that would determine which groups had to be filled by the listener candidates. So you would actually have six listener candidates and two staff candidates in the first election. Now, to make this possible, you need to have a very rigorous nominations process. And what I'm proposing is that the lab create a nominations committee. How much time do I have?
4 minutes.
4 minutes, okay. The lab would create a nominations committee which would go out, and this is kind of along the lines of what Mimi was talking about, that the committee would go out and recruit candidates to run in the elections from all of the constituency groups, and to recruit not just people who belong to those constituencies, but people who are actively involved in organizations working on behalf of those constituencies, organizations working for social change. They would go into the community, they would make announcements. It would be a very open process, inviting people to become candidates. And once they did that, once they applied for candidacy through the committee, applied for being nominated, I should say, then they would go through a very rigorous evaluation. There would be questionnaires, there would be interviews, there would be public meetings where they could, answer and explain their vision, their plans for Pacifica. And at the end of that process, this would actually also go beyond the lab. The lab would also appoint a larger body similar to the body that was proposed for the general manager search committee, so that you would have this nominations committee consisting of lab and listeners who would evaluate candidates basically along the lines of their loyalty and their commitment to the Pacifica mission. And at the end of that process, some of those candidates would be nominated by the committee, and that would be indicated on the ballot. Now, anybody else who wants to run could go through the same process that took place at KPFA, essentially the petition process, you know, 20 signatures or whatever, and you can become a candidate, but you won't have the advantage of being nominated by the nominations committee. And I think that this is important also as a protective measure, as a means, as this gentleman said, he doesn't know the first thing about it, you know, how to vote. This is a means of informing people what people who have been active in the struggle think about the candidates. So it's almost a form of endorsement, but not quite.